Hello, everybody. This is Craig D. Lindsay, a.k.a. Uncle Krizzle, a.k.a. Anastasia Beaverhausen, a.k.a. Black Larry David, a.k.a. Tavis Not-So-Smiley, a.k.a. Cranky Charlie Rose, and a bunch of other names. And welcome to another intriguing edition of Motherfuckers I Know, the podcast where I talk to motherfuckers I know because I can. And for today's installment, I'm going all the way out to where are you at?
I'm in California.
Oh, San Jose?
Bay Area,
goddammit. Yeah. And the Bay Area of California to talk to today's guest on the Krizzle Cast. She is a filmmaker. We're talking to her today about a new film she has written and produced called Amity and other things. Her name is Maria Murphy. Welcome to the Krizzle Cast, ma'am.
Thank you. Hello.
Hello. This your first time doing the podcast?
Why, yes it is.
Really? Wow. Well, you know, I guess you'll be okay. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, I didn't know, like, you know, if you had any experience, speaking on podcasts and doing other things. Because, I mean, you're a filmmaker, so I'm guessing you've been, you know, on the grind, promoting your stuff. Because, you know, the film we're talking about here, Amity, I mean, I believe it's done had screenings and played festivals and everything.
It's just had one screening in San Francisco last month so far.
Okay. And, well, just how was that?
It went well, I think. It was pretty well received.
Yeah.
Some of the films I've made have not been so well received, so it was kind of nice, kind of a pleasant experience.
Well, I guess we should just, as always, I always forget to establish just who you are. Well, just who people are on this podcast to let people know, like, why the hell am I listening to this person? You know, just to let them know, just, like, why you're so... I figured you were such an interesting person to talk about on this podcast, because apart from you being a filmmaker, I've known you... for quite a while now, because ever since I was on Twitter, you were one of the very omnipresent people amongst the film geeks. Would that be an accurate description?
I think that's probably accurate. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I mean, because started going on Twitter. Peer pressure got me on there around 2008. When you started on there?
That's about when I started to, in order to promote an early film.
An early film.
And I was a little wary of Twitter to begin with, but it's been good. It's been a good film promotion tool.
I mean, you were
a good way to meet people.
Yeah, I mean, you were on and off it for a while, weren't you?
I am on and off, yeah.
Because I distinctly remember you were Maria Murphy on Twitter, then, like, you vanished for, I forget, I don't know how long, and then now you're back as new Maria?
That's right. And then I vanished, and then I went back to Maria Murphy for a while. And, I think all my accounts might be deactivated at the moment, but I'm sure I'll come back.
Yeah, really? I mean, just, well...
I came back as Maria Murphy again just for Amity, this movie, because Maria Murphy had a lot more followers than new Maria did, so
yeah.
I figured I could reach a few more people that way.
I mean, what drove you off it the first time?
Oh, I was having some trouble with a stalker for a while.
Really?
Yeah. So, to just lock my account, but then, I don't know, people seem to keep getting through, so I just got rid of it altogether for quite a while. Protect my privacy a little bit.
I've interviewed, like, I don't know, 30-some-odd people for this thing, or just I've never, haven't gotten to that point where somebody actually had a stalker on, you know, any of the online, way we call it, networks and everything.
Definitely a danger of that. There's, the cyber stalking is a kind of a fairly new phenomenon, obviously, and not something that the law enforcement is very quick to deal with yet, because all of the services, you know, Twitter and Facebook have a lot of privacy policies in place, so they can't, you know, people can create accounts and then delete them and then, you know, create new ones without being tracked in any way, without getting a court order. So it's, if you're just out there, you know, promoting films, I don't think it would be much of a problem, but I was talking about my kids and where I lived and where I was going and that sort of thing, and in order to, I had to cut it all off in order to kind of protect myself.
Well, I mean, you don't have to get into any anything you don't want to, but just this is, when did this start and how deep did it go?
It started, about a year and a half ago, and it stopped. I haven't had any contact in the last 6 months or so, or 9 months even. So it went to, I had, you know, court hearings and detectives and all sorts of weird threats, and I was getting stuff in the mail as well, and it was scary, you know, but I think it was all in the end just trying to scare me. I don't think there was any real threat, but you can never be too sure. So again, for my own safety and the safety of my kids, I figured I should just block that off, which was hard because it was a good social outlet for me and a good networking tool as well for the filmmaking. That kind of was taken away from me during that era.
I mean, just how exactly, I know just on Twitter and everything, but just, I don't know if this was a guy or a girl or whatever, but just like what exactly was happening with the stalking? I mean, just how intense was this person in getting close to you online?
Well, they created false identities and tried to get information from me that way, and would make kind of vague threats about my kids, and it was someone, I believe it was someone I knew, but I was never able to prove that definitively, because it was someone I knew who knew where I lived and knew where I worked, the threat was much more real, you know. Otherwise, if it was just a stranger, I could have more easily ignored it, I think, or, you know, just blocked that person. But they kept coming back with different identities and different email addresses, and each one I would block would come back with another one, and I cut off several email addresses and my Twitter account, and then they started calling me and faxing me, and So it was all very creepy. It was a very hard experience, and it's very isolating too, because anyone else who knew this person became afraid as well and didn't want to be, you know, targeted. So I was alone in it, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm not gonna ask you who you think. We believe the person to be, but it just has to be very crazy being somebody like person like you who are just making films and have two children and everything. You just seem to live this normal existence, and then all of a sudden you have somebody who apparently appears to take quite a interest in you that is very unhealthy, and just like, I'm just trying to see what that mind frame is like, because like, nobody ever liked me like that. So yeah. I'm just trying to see, how was that initially for you, and just, as you mentioned, it was creepy, it was scary and everything, but just like, it just had to have been just like a very unusual experience for you, just having somebody be, take a vested interest in you like that.
Yeah, I don't know how to describe it, but it was frightening, and it was unwanted, and it felt like a constant violation of my life, and it affected so many parts of my life. You know, I had to take off work to go to the police multiple times and, you know, go to court, and it was really disruptive and really damaging. It was horrible. And I, you know, think about the people you hear about, you know, famous people to whom this sort of thing happens. And you don't take it that seriously. It just sounds like, oh, a fan went a little bit too far. But it's genuinely scary, and you can't stop thinking about it because they don't let you stop thinking about it. They keep trying to get to you over and over and over again. It was a horrible experience. Honestly,
it's always an odd thing, because here's the thing, is like, I mean, you're of course you're a woman, and I'm assuming a very interesting, attractive women and everything, and you seem to have an interesting, not only interesting online presence, but interesting screen presence. And like you're down there in California, just basically making movies, and it's just weird. Just like, how does it even get to that point where it's just, okay, you're just this one person there, you know, doing your thing. I mean, you're not anybody, you know, substantially major, not to say that, you know, you know, not counted or anything like that, but just like, you're just a person. You're just a
right.
You're just a filmmaker, your mother and everything, just like, just doing your thing. And I'm just like, it's just weird, just like, it's just,
but it happens. I when it started to happen to me, I started reading about it and finding all of these women, you know, almost all women it happens to, and almost always men doing this, who just develop this sort of obsession. And it manifests itself in this angry way that, you know, may start off being a form of affection, but becomes this crazy, scary obsession. And it's unfortunately not all that uncommon, and I think in the cyber world becoming more and more common.
Yeah. I mean, because I know a lot of women, and there's a lot of women I do like, and I just would like to have friendships or relationships with them, and try to, you know, make a at least friendly presence online. But there, I actually worry about that sometimes, like where that line is towed, where you could just say something.
Obviously,
somebody,
some people don't see the line. They don't have the same line.
Yeah.
And they keep taking things further and further when they're unwanted. That's a healthy sign in you.
Yeah.
You are concerned about that line, because if you weren't, then you might do crazy things.
Well, I'm always afraid of that, just like, because, you know, just like anything, just like, hey, you know, just want me to, yeah, you know, just want to go get some soup, or just say something like, I'm a big smartass online, so I'll say some goofy shit, and then next thing you know, just like, just like have some, like, what do you mean by that? And just like, I didn't mean, I didn't mean a damn thing. I really didn't. I just, like, I'm just being a smartass. But I mean, yes, I mean, you know, I just want to know at what point did you say, oh, Jesus, this dude is a stalker. What the hell is happening here? When, you know, I mean, what was that point like?
It was when I realized that he had created all of these other personalities in order to contact me, and as soon as I realized that, I sent him a cease and desist letter, and that just seemed to provoke more craziness.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the dangers with this kind of personality is that they're after, at some point they're just after attention, and any sort of attention is positive, so yeah. If he's getting calls from the police, he knows he's getting through to me, and that's, you know, feeding whatever that need is, and so it continues. The advice I got when I was going through this was, would have varied a great deal from leave this, you know, move away, get away from there, run away, and, you know, hide your identity so that no crazy person can come find you and shoot you, to, you know, just ignore it and they'll go away. To, you know, it just, no one really knows how to deal with this sort of thing.
Yeah. And, I mean, where is this person now?
In San Jose.
Oh, wait, wow. I just...
Yeah, kinda, yeah. So, just, yeah. I mean, I changed phone numbers, changed locks, changed addresses, changed everything I could, you know. But there's only so much you can do.
Yeah. Well, I guess at this point in the conversation, I guess we should just
I wasn't expecting to talk about any of that, so...
I wasn't either. I didn't know anything about this. You just sprang this on me. I don't even know how the hell it came about. But, initially, like I said, I was going to talk to you about filmmaking, because that's where I kind of knew you from.
Mm-hmm.
And, just where did that all begin for you? As I always ask people, you know, how did it all begin with what you're doing now?
Yeah, my dad was very involved in, like, the local theater when I was a kid, so mm-hmm. I started out acting and singing and dancing and all of that when I was very, very young. I think the first time I was on stage, I was about 4.
Mm-hmm. And where was this?
This was in Yreka, California, a little tiny town near the border of Oregon.
Okay.
Just very, you know, community theater, tiny little things. And I was involved in acting throughout my life, and then I lived in New York for a while and took a filmmaking course there.
Uh-huh.
And I was mostly doing it thinking I would, you know, shoot something and try to break into acting that way, but surprised myself by really falling in love with being behind the camera.
Huh.
And so I started making some, you know, documentaries and little short films and things, and then moved back out to California and continued acting. I that's probably my biggest love is acting.
Yeah.
Because it's just pure fun. Filmmaking is, like, so hard. Filmmaking is exhausting, and it's like, if you didn't, I kind of liken it to having children. Like, you have to forget how hard it was in order to ever do it again.
Uh-huh.
So you keep sort of blocking out how difficult it was, because it's just hard. Whereas acting is fun. it's just free and fun, and none of the real burden is on you like it is when you're a director or a producer. It you can just take whatever you're given and make it the best you can make it. So I got married, and my husband and I started making some short films together.
Yeah.
And then started making features. And that's the first one that got some attention in festival play. It was called Around the Bay. And that's actually when I started Twitter, too, was to promote that one. And then Canary, which was it's kind of a controversial, kind of a hard film. Uh-huh. But critics really dug it. Normal people, not so much. My parents didn't like that one at all.
Your parents. You point out that your parents didn't dig it.
My parents were not so
sad. I wanted to ask you about your acting, but in the sense you brought it up, what was so controversial about this film, Canary, that you did?
Okay, it was just that it's not an easy film to watch. It's not very audience friendly. It's challenging. It's intellectual.
Uh-huh.
It's got a lot of ideas in it. It can be very dull if you're not, you know, bringing your own interpretations to it, I think. I think it's the most ambitious of the films we made, and the most exciting in its way. But it's not, it's just not for everybody.
I mean, what is it about?
It's sort of a dystopian, science fiction-y, alternate or slightly future world where corporation called Canary has has a big presence, and the thing is also it's a lot of this is open to interpretation as well.
Okay,
what the film is actually about,
as many sci-fi films are.
People are responsible for taking care of their organs, and if they don't take good enough care of their organs, someone will come and take them back. And so we follow this this character. Who never speaks and is never named. She's just sort of this canary agent who goes around in a white jumpsuit and a white van and stalks people and then presumably takes out their organs. and it's fascinating. And there are a lot of different languages spoken in it, so there are scenes that are entirely in Russian or Vietnamese or German. The one scene that sort of has some exposition is the one I was in, where I play this PR firm manager who's trying to come up with a campaign for this agency.
Yeah.
But otherwise, it's sort of just these little vignettes of people living and having these little moments, and then this woman comes through and may or may not take their organs. So it's just a little bit of a difficult film for people to get their heads around, and it makes some people very angry because they feel like they're being I feel like they're being forced to sit through something that doesn't make sense, I guess. You know.
I like to call it jerked around. But,
right.
Yeah.
Some people feel that way about it. And I perfectly understand that feeling.
I mean, were you trying to go for some type of, you know, because a couple weeks ago, it was announced that Shane Carruth has a movie in the next Sundance Film Festival. Were you trying to go kind of in that?
Like the timer?
Well, not because Primers is a film about time travel, but just in that whole realm of indie science fiction, where since it's independent films, you know, you can present science fiction in a way that's very a lot more heady than it would in science fiction films.
That was kind of the goal, and sort of bring a science fiction and like the terror of the mundanity of evil. Because a lot of this film is just sort of mundane and accepted. These horrible things are happening, and no one's raising a fuss about it. You know, there's at no point does anyone try to fight back. You know, it just kind of is, and it feels very much like a direction that we could, you know, our current society could go.
Uh-huh. All right, tell me about the parents' reaction. I want to hear more about this.
Oh, man. They hated it. They hated it, yeah. They were, you know, kind of gently suggested that maybe we should make a film with, like, a plot.
A plot?
Maybe next time. Something with a plot.
Well, in a way, you kind of did with Amity, but, well, and, in its own way, but, well, we should also establish, and, once again, going by IMDb here, you know, because you write a lot of produced stuff with, your husband, Alejandro.
My ex-husband.
Okay. Well, you want to talk about that now? Because I was wondering about that, because I was looking through your, IMDb profile and said you two were separated, so I didn't know exactly what the hell was going on with that.
Yeah, we've actually been separated for 3 years.
Separated for three years and just... And well, you two...
Yeah,
did you two get married?
Still working toward the divorce. Pardon?
Well, you two were married in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all... what happened? You want to talk about that?
Sure, yeah. We were married in 2002. We have two kids. One born in 2005 and one born in 2007. We split up actually right after shooting, shortly after shooting Amity. That was in the summer of 2009. And we were shooting two films simultaneously, which, mm-hmm. you know, for future reference is probably not the healthiest thing for a marriage.
Yeah.
So we would, I was working full-time, and then on the weekends we would, on Saturdays we would shoot a film called Child of God, which is still in post-production, mm-hmm. and then on Sundays we would shoot Amity. It was a very intense time. And then, yeah, I'm not going to get into the divorce thing, really, but we've split up in the end of 2009, and, yeah.
I mean, to be
we still have a couple of movies that were Amity just finally got finished, and Child of God still has a lot of work to be done on it. So that's difficult, you know, when you're so tied up with someone, not only you know in a marriage and with kids, but also creatively. So it's been hard getting these films done because. we don't get along anymore, so we can't really come together on that.
Well, I could, just thinking, because it's funny, because I've, you know, just associate myself, I associate you with your ex-husband so much, because when I was, well, we even started talking about doing a podcast, and you told me about the movie you did, kind of looking around to see more about it online, and I saw that Alejandro directed it, and then I emailed you, like, oh, and then when you sent me the movie to watch, I said, yeah, I saw your husband, I saw your old man's movie, you want to talk about it now, and then you sent me an email, a very... very vigorous email saying it's my movie, and so I didn't exactly like. But he's the director of it, but you're the writer producer, and it just God has me wondering now since this movie is kind of. I mean, would you say Amity is finished?
Yes, I would say Amity is finished.
And then you got another one. And I'm just thinking, just what the. Hell is that like? Yeah, as you just said, you two don't get along anymore, but I'm thinking that would, I mean, well, he's the director and you're the right producer, and I don't exactly know exactly what is the setup. It's like on Child of God, but just, I don't know exactly how much you want to get into, just how intense has it gotten for you two professionally, but, you know, you have to maintain some kind of relationship, not only.
Yeah, we mostly haven't. I mean, I have not let's see, when we split up, we were still editing Babnik, which is the previous film, and I was no longer involved once we split up. So I did not have any input into the final cut of that or Amity. I was involved early on in the editing of both of them, but not in the end. It just isn't possible to collaborate, for us, at least. I was hoping initially that we might be able to continue a professional relationship, but, I think there's just too much baggage in there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and Child of God as well, it will be edited entirely by him, and I won't have much to do with it at this point. I was much more involved in Canary and Around the Bay in the editing process. As far as you keep saying producer, writer-producer, I didn't write Amity. I was involved in some of the storytelling. The film is improvised.
Yeah.
And the basic story came from Alejandro. It does say I'm a writer on here.
Yeah, it does.
Get that fixed. I think it just shows the first one, and we're probably both listed. So.
Yeah. I got to point out that I did not, the copy I get did not have the exact final credits on it, so...
Right, yeah, we didn't have the credits yet.
I am freeballing it here. But, I just have to ask, just... Where did it all go wrong?
I don't know. Artistic people sometimes have trouble getting along. I don't know. It just went wrong. We were very, very close, but didn't make each other happy, I think.
Ah, man.
Yeah. It's very sad. I'm still really sad about it. Mm-hmm. 3 years later, it still breaks my heart quite a bit. We made babies together, and we made films together, and we're forever tied up in each other's lives for those reasons. Mm-hmm. But we just don't get along. So. But he's got a girlfriend, and he's actually got the kids this weekend, and we've worked out, how to live our lives separately.
Yeah.
For the most part, there's still battles.
Did you ever think you'd be talking about this stuff with me?
No, I wasn't. I was not. I didn't know what the heck I'd be talking to you about. So. Yeah.
Because I wasn't even expecting it. It's like, damn, he's like, we're getting deep here. But the thing about it is just like, it's funny because we're just talking about you and just all these things that have happened in your life, both personally and professionally, and I just wanted to see just how much would you say that you've done as an actress? I mean, just didn't exactly know the experience because, once again, going by IMDb, just look like you've just performed in a couple of your films, but I'm sure you've done a lot of other things.
So I've mostly been more of a theater performer throughout my life,
mm-hmm.
And I've done, short films and stuff, but obviously, those are my only IMDb credits. And I'm a single mother working full time, so I don't see that I'll have many opportunities for quite a while to do more.
Yeah.
Which is a shame. I really miss it. But this is the way life is sometimes.
Yeah.
That's sounding depressing.
I guess you haven't.
But I'm happy being, I've got really amazing kids, and we have a lot of fun together. So it's just all some different kind of adventure.
Yeah. Obviously, you have not listened to the podcast because you would, just saying depressing shit is a recurring theme on here.
Oh, is it? Good. Okay. Yeah,
so you're in good company right now. Just... But I mean, what is it? Is this, I don't know, is this something you want to delve back into, or just because you mentioned that, you know, you have a lot of things on your plate, but in terms of theater work, mm-hmm. just what attracts you to it? Just what is it about being in the theater, and just what experiences have you had that made you say, oh man, this is what I need to do?
Have you ever done it? Have you ever acted?
Yeah, I did improv here and there. Just nothing really majorly professional. I never pursued a damn thing. It's just like,
mm-hmm.
Because it's just, yeah, I don't know, just it's the combination of just the concentration and just basically, and I'm, once again, not trying to diminish or just what you do or anything, just like, yeah, I've learned, especially as I've gotten older, I'm not a big fan of trying to pretend to be something I'm not. I've learned I'm not that keen on playing along, and it's just like, you know, especially for actors who take their craft seriously. I mean, you really try to, and when I, you know, after, you know, I'm really admire actors, especially when they're in a performance and they're really portraying what they're doing, whether it's on the stage or on the screen or whatever. It's just that I just lost the ability to have that kind of dedication and determination.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I spend most of my time pretending because I've got little kids who spend all their time pretending. So I'm going to sound like straight actor girl, but it's where I feel most alive, and it's where I feel most like every little cell in my body is alert and working.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, there's nothing else in life that gives me that, really. And that's something I crave. You know, I want to feel that engaged all mm-hmm. the time. And it's very hard to find ways to feel, you know, 800% engaged, other than acting.
Yeah.
I mean, there are other arts will do that as well, I think. You know, if I can feel that way editing sometimes, because it's so involved. But with acting, you've also got this connection to other people, both your audience and your fellow actors, where you're just creating something that has never happened before and couldn't happen without whatever combination of things are happening right now between all of you. You know, there's a scene in Amity, the scene in Amity, which is an extensive scene in the limo, where I was having this connection to the other actor, Greg. It was just completely unexpected. It was nothing rehearsed and nothing planned, and felt so exciting and so real and true and blah blah blah. But it did. It felt really, really good. It was really fun, and it was like I was saying things to this character that I needed to be saying to my husband. You know, this character was sort of the character of the, you know, the main character, Greg, was sort of modeled after Alejandro's dad, and so therefore also had a lot to do with him. A lot of his own personality was in that, and so there was just really complicated stuff going on where there was like this secret conversation between me and my husband that was occurring between me and this other character, improvised live, you know, in the middle of the night in this limo.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know what to tell you. I just, acting is awesome. I love it.
Well, I just, you know, it's funny that you say that you find equal pleasure, you say, in both acting and editing, because I believe, it seems like in both those instances, you are creating a story, creating a life, and you are guiding the audience through
exactly
what where you want to take them. So just like you're literally taking them on his journey by yourself when you're doing either of those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
And so, it's funny because, you know, we keep on going in these interesting tangents. And, but, you know, we should, establish that you did, direct something. Which was a short film or a video short or something?
Yeah, it's a 40-minute short film, so, you know, medium short.
Mm-hmm.
Unprogrammable length.
Yeah, unprogrammable length. Okay. Well, guess you have not frequented any film festivals in North Carolina because a lot of that stuff.
Oh, do you have some alternate length movies in North Carolina?
Oh yeah, yeah, we're big on that. We'll take anything, but
don't take anything.
But yeah, you did.
Yeah, that was a film I directed while I was actually like 8 months pregnant with my daughter.
Yeah.
And Alex and I had made a few, you know, little short things. We've made a bunch of little short things, and we've made a documentary about a local band.
Yeah.
And then he wrote this script and was just going to kind of like throw it together with a few people we mm-hmm. knew. And I really liked the script. And they said, no, this is really good. We have to actually cast some good people and take this seriously. And he said, well, you can direct it then. And so I did. And it was, it was my first time directing actors. Well, I guess my only time really directing actors, although I did some sort of directing little scenes within some of the other movies. And it was more of a traditional, like we rehearsed for several weeks, and then shot it over 3 days.
Mm.
Whereas the subsequent films had no rehearsal and were improvised, and you know, hours and hours and hours and hours were shot, and then it was kind of created during editing. But this was, you know, much more strict.
Yeah.
And it was a very tense little movie. I'm kind of proud of it, actually. It's nothing brilliant, but it's got some really good tension, which is something I'm really drawn to in film and as a director. And I think we achieved that in making it just a family unit. It's a mother, a father, and a daughter. And a revelation, you know, that she learns about. And but it's all my interest was mostly on the tension between the three characters and the release, the occasional release of it, and then the building up again. It was a lot of fun. It was really, really fun to make that movie. And it reminds me. I probably want to make more movies.
Yeah. Well, just the more.
Have you made movies at all? Or are you?
Oh no, I'm a fraud. But
solely a consumer.
I'm a consumer. Whatever. I just bitch and moan. Whatever you want to say.
that's an important part of the dialogue.
Oh well, you know, I hope at some point. Yeah, I could. It'll be dialogue and everything. Just, I don't know, just dialogue, that whole term right there, that seems to be a term that's both used well and used not so well. So, it depends on who you talk to.
I meant it a little facetiously there.
Okay. I was taking this shit seriously. I'm sorry. With the way we've been talking these past, I don't know, 40 minutes or so, I'm just like, oh, damn, okay. But, all right, but, But yeah, now you got me thinking. You've done movies, and then you've done movies with Alejandro, and just where do y'all even get the budget? Where do you get all the provincial? Where do you get all the things required to make these films? Because you guys have made several shorts, features, and everything. And just how
yeah, we've made six features actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was all self-funded. I mean, it was all done super on the cheap. Uh-huh. You know, we bought cameras and sound equipment, and then, you know, all of the cast and crew worked for free. Uh-huh. That's one of the benefits of living in this area. There are so many people wanting to do this kind of thing, and really pretty talented too, you know. So you can get people to help out. And so, you know, so many people want the experience and they want to learn, but they don't really want a helmet. So we were fortunate to find a lot of people who just come out and work, you know, ridiculously long hours to make these things. And the actors always had a good time. It was always really fun for the actors. It's hard on the camera people because they would be like 45-minute takes of a scene, and you're just holding this camera and trying to keep it steady, and your body is falling apart. I was also a camera person on several of these, so I know of where I speak, and it's exhausting. But for an actor, it's really fun because in film, you don't get a lot of chance to just go with a scene. You're usually doing little, short takes of and reaction shots, and versus theater where you have, you know, the entire process of a play to go through. So this kind of acting is pretty rewarding for actors because you do get to feel like you're part of the actual story instead of just jumping in and doing a little scene here and there. So yeah, it was all self-funded. I had a pretty good paying job. So we didn't spend money on anything else. So we just, that was kind of like, we didn't take vacations or buy anything. We just made movies.
Yeah.
That was the expense of life.
I guess we should stop yanking everybody's chain and start talking about the movie that brought us together now, Amity, which I saw, which I found to be quite fascinating, mainly because, well, first off, just tell people what the movie is about.
So the movie's about a guy who, he's estranged from his daughter, and he hasn't seen her in we don't know how many years, but he decides to, he gets an invitation to her graduation, high school graduation, decides to show up and surprise her with a limo, and he gets to her house on graduation day, and where she says, no, I've got plans, you can't just show up here and take over my evening. So this guy is kind of an abrasive and pathetic character, but at least I like him. Like, I find him, there's something tender and likable about him, even as he's really hard to like. So he's, you know, out there with a limo and has it for the night, and so he and the limo driver just drive around for the night and talk, and his character is revealed a little more through that, and then they pick up some women at some point, there's not much more to the plot than that. I don't think it's more of a character study, I think, but maybe, you know, you're the film critic, you can tell me what it's about.
You've painted me into quite a peculiar corner. Well, I mean, the thing that I found so interesting about it, and which I
found immediately so entrancing about this film is because I know a lot of guys like the lead character. How, like, I still hang out at bars drinking with these people. And, just the guy, I mean, we should explain, like, the guy, you say he's very abrasive, very obnoxious, he's one of these guys that is at that age, in middle age, where he shouldn't act so dickish. And yet he still is, and just like...
It's not cute anymore.
Yeah, and just...
If it ever was.
And it's just this interesting study about a guy who, he just had this idea that, you know, this is just the... it's just like, and that's why it's just so interesting knowing that you produced and just and did a lot of things, even though it's mostly an improvised movie and it's kind of like came through in the collaborative stage of the story, because it is about it. It's just basically this focus on how sometimes masculinity does not work well on certain men. It's just this sense like he's just acting as this alpha male, and it's just does not work well for him in any situation. Because, you know, in the movie you talk about how he rents his limo and hands out this limo driver, and the limo driver is kind of this very silent type who's very reserved and very calm and everything. I mean, even when the guy is at his most obnoxious, he seems to be in a very... The limo driver is always in this very calm, serene state, and you just realize it's just this study of how these two men, you're watching them just have two completely different attitudes, and one has and the lead character Greg, he's kind of taken this path as a man that has almost, cost him his, the love and respect of his daughter, and eventually the respect of most of the people he meets, because this whole movie is just about the journey of this guy who just goes out and tries to deal with other people after being rejected by his daughter, and, like, the, people barely, that he hangs around with don't want to deal with him. And it's just like, and I don't want to reveal what happens at the end, but it's just like, he's just... basically at that point where just like I just screwed up my entire life. I need something to hold on to. I need some sense that I've won in some capacity, and that kind of happens at the end. I'm not gonna give anything away, but just like this interesting look about how it's kinda like how it's almost like you watched all those early movies Neil LaBute did, and this is kind of like your commentary on them, just like is like, basically just you're just saying it, just there's some men out there who are just dicks, and they're gonna get to that point where if they don't realize soon, they're gonna lose everything.
That's
what I got from it. So
I'm sorry.
That's what I got from it, sir.
I like that. That works for me. I think it's a pretty interesting look at masculinity.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not a true masculinity. He's putting on this show. Always putting on a show of what he thinks he's supposed to be, or you know, that's his shtick.
Yeah.
And it's as you say, it doesn't work for him, and it hasn't worked for him. He's not going to give it up, because that would involve, I don't know what, finding something new, or actually, being with himself, or figuring out, how to not be constantly selfish.
Yeah. Well, it, yeah, also, you established earlier in our conversation that you have a speaking part in the film, and kind of like this very substantial, this moment in the movie where, well, first off, I think what I was actually wondering when I saw it, like, is that you? Are you actually in the movie that you're in? And it's turned out you're in, because, like, as you mentioned, the character Greg picks up a bunch of women and put them in a limo and drinking champagne and everything like that. You basically play this very giggly lady.
Okay.
And he does not.
Yeah, he didn't like that very much.
Yeah, didn't like that very much, and it's a very intense scene because you don't know where he's going to go because of course he's very very serious about this and you kind of goad him and antagonize him and just this show. This very unusual showdown between you two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of just... And I say, coming up with the story and most of everything was improvised and everything like that, was that kind of... was that something that was integral into the story, that just worked into... was that always a part of the story, or that's kind of what happened?
You know, I've been trying to remember how that, you know... What the plan was. I think there was, I mean, it changed quite a bit from when we got into the limo.
Yeah.
I think I remember getting the direction basically of, okay, now, piss him off. Which I did very effectively.
Yeah.
It was sort of intended to just keep escalating and escalating and escalating, you know, until, you know, a possible violent outbreak. But then just something happened between me and Greg in that scene where I just suddenly found myself thinking, oh, God, he needs to be forgiven, you know? And so I did, and it was completely disarming to the character and the actor, you know, and changed the tone of the whole thing in a way that was unexpected for all of us, and yet felt really just true, you know. So no, that part was not supposed to happen. There were various ideas going into it, but that's the way that our films tend to work. We would have sort of a vague idea of where we wanted it to go, and then we would see what happened. And then kind of create it during editing. And this, more than most, I think, just really took on a life of its own during that two-hour shoot that we had that night in the limo.
Well, now I just would like to know, well, not only for about this movie, but everything you've done in the past, where does all this go?
Where does it go?
Amity, I admit, is the only thing I've seen from you, and just, I don't know what everything else is. I mean, where can people find all this other stuff? First of all, can I just say I should never admit that shit out in public? Just like...
Admit what?
I don't know. I just saw one movie you did.
What?
I'm just like a dumbass. But yeah. I liked it. But just...
it's not like they're out there available for you to watch, you know?
Well, exactly. That's why I'm asking, just like, where can me and everybody else find the stuff you've done?
You know, it's not really possible at the moment. It's not possible yet, unfortunately.
Why is that?
We don't have any way of doing that right now. We were close to getting we had a distribution deal for two of the films, but then that fell through because the DVD distribution business kind of fell apart. There isn't really much market for these, and we don't have the resources to do it ourselves. And, you know, I don't know. I hope at some point they will be seen somewhere by somebody.
I mean, I don't know if you would think about doing it, taking it over the fan door or something like that, or just some place where they dig very indie films. Or...
Yeah, maybe. This is kind of one of the problems with the whole ending of the creative relationship, is that it's hard to negotiate anything like that. But... You know, I think at one point we were talking to the movie guys about it, and I think Cinematic for a while, but, yeah. No, is that what it's called? I forget what it's called. Anyway, at this point, most of the films are kind of too old even for anyone to be interested in them. So I don't know. I don't know. Hey, if anyone wants to distribute the movies, let me know. I'd be happy to help make that happen. But I don't know how to do it.
Uh-huh. But, just basically, what's the future of Amity now?
There might not be any future of Amity. That might be it. A few people see it, and that's the end.
Okay. Well, I mean, I hate to...
is that good promotion there?
Yeah, especially since we're doing a podcast kind of geared around it.
I think it's going to be playing at a festival in Berlin. Called Unknown Pleasures. Other than that, I don't know at the moment.
Oh my god, like Unknown Pleasures, that's like, is that like Odie in them?
I don't know.
Oh. Yeah, I think I was talking with Odie Henderson about that.
Name is familiar.
Yeah, because him and... And this guy, Michael, I don't know how to pronounce the last name. Yeah, because Odie was on a podcast, I think. I may have to go back on that and look back. But yeah, he was talking about organizing some films up in Berlin, and that might be his thing. But I mean, would you consider taking that film, or you and Alejandro taking that film on the festival trail?
Yeah, absolutely, but it's expensive to submit to festivals. I don't know if we have the energy to do that anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there are a few people who have asked to look at it, and we'll see what happens. But we don't have at the moment. There's nothing in the offing.
Yeah. Well, it just makes me ask, just, you know, why make these movies if you don't think there's a future to them?
You know, we made these movies 3 years ago, and that the plan was different then. Uh-huh. There was, you know, Canary did play several festivals and was, you know, getting a lot of attention and a lot of good reviews and, you know, Variety covered her first couple films very positively, and you know.
Yeah.
So things just changed, unfortunately. Yeah.
And nothing came of the, you know, those two films playing at festivals?
There was a distribution deal that then fell through, so no. In the end. Well, you know, who knows what the end is.
Yeah.
I think at some point these films will be available to be seen, but yeah.
IMDb or they say your trademark is a Santa hat.
Yeah, I don't know where that came from. That was my original Twitter icon. Oh, it was from Canary. I wore a Santa hat in Canary.
Oh, okay.
And so my Twitter icon had a Santa hat for a long time.
Your name is Maria, but sometimes they call you Mawa.
That's true. My family called me Mawa.
Yeah. You're a Scorpio?
I am a Scorpio.
Yeah. That was a good Dennis Coffey song, wasn't it?
I don't know. I don't know that.
Dennis Coffey, he's a funk jazz guitarist, played, you know, had a song called Scorpio. It's been sampled by rappers and everything. But I just thought that would be good to bring up for some reason. But, I'm almost regretting that I did. But let's see. I mean, I don't know. Where you got any plans? What does the future hold for you, dear? What's next for you?
What kind of question is that?
I'm sorry.
It's the other question, isn't it? No, it's a good question. What is the future? That's what I'm trying to figure out right now.
Yeah.
Is what the future holds for me. Because where I thought my future was going for many years was, you know, derailed. And so I'm trying to figure that out. But I spend most of my time taking care of two wonderful little kids, and that's my main focus. And I do want to get back into creating art. Uh-huh. In some way, I worked on another film, which I edited, that's currently playing at the Santa Fe Film Festival, and that's called Garifuna in Peril.
Okay.
And it just played in a New York festival and a London festival.
All right.
So I'm trying to keep my hand in where I can. Editing tends to be something I can do, you know, more piecemeal when I have time to spare.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, you know, going out and trying to shoot a movie for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm just going to keep doing stuff.
At this point, I would ask, where can people find you online, but do you really want to go there now? Considering everything we've talked about?
Mari Murphy Twitter account.
Mm-hmm.
We'll come back.
Okay.
That's where you can find me, generally speaking.
You had a blog. You know, I went on your blog to look on some stuff, but I mean, you haven't uploaded that. And I'm like, well, you haven't been too bit. You know, it hasn't been
years.
Yeah, exactly. Just like you haven't been on there in a while, so I don't know if you want to drop anything on that.
Yeah, it's MariMurphy.com, and one day I may start doing things on that again too.
Yeah.
I'm kind of semi-retired.
Yeah.
Yeah. But thank you for talking to me. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, you're so welcome. Did you like how this all turned out for you?
I'm not sure. I'll have to think about it.
Oh, crap.
I talked a lot more than I intended to. So. I think I'm okay. I think I'm okay with it.
Okay, well, again, you know where to find me and everything. Thank you very much, Miss Murphy. You know what I'm saying, Miss Murphy, for taking part in this.
Uncle Crystal.
You know, and let me close this out here. As this is motherfuckers I know, as always. This is Craig D. Lindsay, as always, saying I haven't had a good time since 1997. Also, I may be dying. I'm not sure about that, but I may have to get back to you on that. We'll just see how the next couple of weeks go. But yeah.